Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page with the cover story headline, Where the Money Lives. Take a stroll through the Triangle's most affluent neighborhoods and zip codes. And the actual cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with another headline, Mapping Wealth in the Triangle, a Geographic Snapshot of Local Affluence. And this article is written by Cameron Snipes. After honing in on North Carolina as the place to begin raising their family, Dan Ryder and his wife Eva eventually chose Cary, but coming from New Jersey, Eva had her suspicions. She jokingly asked me, "Why Cary? All the same people are going to be there," Dan says. Relocating from Morristown, New Jersey, the writers confessed they heard a lot about the area from friends who either moved here from the northeastern U.S. or knew of people who did. "But if you're down here, you wanted a different life," Dan says. "The hospitality here is better." The writers, both pharmacists, settled in the Cary zip code of 27519 with their two infant children. They chose the area for its suburban feel, its proximity to parks, including Thomas E. Brooks Park, and its commitment to keeping common areas neat and tidy. The average home price in the neighborhood they chose hovers just above $400,000. "And we feel like our tax dollars go further here," he says. The area the writers are now a part of is the zenith of wealth in the Triangle area. According to data collected by the Business Journals, a parent publication of Triangle Business Journal, the Cary zip code of 27519 has the highest affluence score based on a number of factors, including per capita income, median household income, and median home value. Other neighborhoods in the wealthiest zip code include Cameron Pond, Highcroft Village, and a portion of the Preston area. In addition, the nationwide study looked at a number of other contributors to affluence. Intellectual wealth. The area of Cary that ranks the highest not only possesses the highest median household income and the highest percentage of workers earning more than $100,000 per year, it also lays claim to high intellectual wealth. The area scored the highest percentage of adults with bachelor's degrees at nearly 74%, and one of the highest percentages of adults with advanced degrees at 32%. The writers are a prime example. Both Dan and Eva have Doctor of Pharmacy degrees from Rutgers University. Currently a stay-at-home mom, Eva is in the process of reciprocating her pharmacy license with the state of North Carolina. "But the good thing is, we knew we could have the life we wanted here on one salary," Dan says, "so she can go back to work when she's ready." Investment income. Another wealth factor in the study looked at the percentage of households with interest, dividends, or net rental income. With nearly half of all households with at least one of those wealth contributors, the 27517 area of Chapel Hill comes out on top. The area includes tony neighborhoods like Governor's Club, which borders Jordan Lake and sits on the south end of the UNC Chapel Hill campus. Not surprisingly, the 27517 area is also near the top in percentage of adults with advanced degrees. At about 39%, the area is second to its neighbor to the north, the 27514 zip, with an advanced degree percentage of 47%. The area includes UNC Chapel Hill's campus and the New Hope community. Retail influence. Where wealth lives, people spend. So where do people in the Triangle's most affluent zip code shop? In Cary's 27519, residents are likely to make a stop at Cary Park Town Center, anchored by Harris Teeter and CVS, or Parkside Town Commons, which is home to the new Field & Stream Outdoor Recreational Store and Golf Galaxy. People living in Raleigh's 27608, which shares Carolina Country Club with zip code 27609, have Harris Teeter-anchored Glenwood Village and the Five Points District, and Cameron Village retail and restaurants are close by. The zip code 27517 runs along the eastern and southeastern parts of Chapel Hill in close proximity to Durham's streets at South Point Mall, 27713. It is home to Glen Lennox and Glenwood Square shopping centers and is beside Aloft Chapel Hill and restaurants such as Tobacco Road. All of these elements are what keep the riders close when it comes to spending their disposable income. I think this will probably be our home for a long while, Dan says. We live so close to the things we want and need. And along with this article, there are some listings. The first one is Most Affluent Zip Codes. Marketers are avid fans of income data for cities and towns, a key tool in their search for the most attractive communities to target. But they're also fascinated by zip code data, especially if they're planning direct mail campaigns. That's why we generated a separate set of affluence rankings for 22,658 U.S. zip code territories with populations of 1,000 or more. Scores are based on the same 12-part formula that covers everything from per capita income to the size and value of homes. An important note, a few zips may be missing from our standings because they're too small or they lack sufficient data. Highest affluence by zip code, 27519 Cary. The national rank is 414th. 27608 Raleigh. 27518 Cary. 27517 Chapel Hill. 27614 Raleigh. 27514 Chapel Hill. 27613 Raleigh. 27502 Apex. 27516 Chapel Hill. And number 10 is 27615 Raleigh. Highest affluence by city, number 1 is Cary, national rank 994th. Number 2, Chapel Hill, then Apex, Morrisville, Holly Springs, Carrboro, Wake Forest, Roseville, Knightdale, then Raleigh. And with this cover story, there's also a related story, the National Snapshot, headlined, Here Are the Most Affluent Cities in America, and this article is written by Ed Stitch. It's easy to guess that the wealthiest people in America live in a financial center like New York City, a political powerhouse like Washington, D.C., or an oil city like Houston. But when the business journals decided to look at where the most affluent Americans live, we wanted more detail, so we drilled down to find the towns, villages, bedroom communities, even neighborhoods where the wealthiest live. The most affluent community in the U.S. is in the New York area. Kensington, which is a village of about 1,100 people on Long Island, about 20 miles from Manhattan. The median household income is more than $190,000. The median house value is more than $1 million. And nearly 42% of adults living there have a master's degree or a Ph.D. Kensington topped a list of 15,090 communities and 22,658 zip code territories across the country that the business journals reviewed. We analyzed 12 U.S. Census Bureau statistical categories to rank every community by its relative affluence. At the bottom of the list is Lakeview Estates, Georgia, about 25 miles east of Atlanta. It couldn't be more different than Kensington. Census data shows that none of the 2,500 people who live there earn six figures per year, and only 1.6% of residents have a bachelor's degree. The median household income is $26,000, and the median house value is $22,000. Here are some other tidbits. Chevy Chase, Maryland has the highest per capita income in the country at $171,000, while Alamo, Georgia has the lowest at $2,900. Four cities have median household incomes of more than $250,000. Three are in Maryland, Chevy Chase Village, and Somerset. And the fourth is Bunker Hill Village, a Texas city about 10 miles west of Houston. Dubuque, Arizona has the lowest median household income at $9,300, and it's the only community in America with a median household income under $12,000. In Chevy Chase Village, 80.6% of households have an income of at least $150,000. Meanwhile, Citrus City, Texas, near the Mexican border, has a poverty rate of 80.6%. Porcupine, South Dakota, has the lowest median house value at $10,000. Want a big house? Just about all the houses in Piney Point Village, also west of Houston, are big, as 82% of the houses in that city have 9 or more rooms. That's at least 9 rooms, not counting bathrooms, laundry rooms, utility rooms, walk-in closets, pantries, or unfinished rooms. Diablo, California, which is in the San Francisco area, has the highest percentage of workers making at least $100,000 per year. A city is more likely to be affluent the more people in it, the more people it has in management, business, science and arts occupations. In Ladera, California, which is near Stanford University, nearly 85% of residents work in one of those occupations. There are 4 cities in the country with 0 residents working in management, business, science, and arts jobs. Tonto Basin, Arizona, Vicksburg, Arizona, Buena, Washington, and B&E, Texas. Ladera has the most residents with bachelor's degrees, 94.2%, followed by Chevy Chase, 93.8%. Those 2 cities flip spots for the most residents with advanced degrees, master's, PhD, and professional, Chevy Chase at 69.1% and Ladera at 65.6%. And along with this article, there is also the listing of the highest affluence scores by city. You may be unfamiliar with Kensington, New York, but our formula says the Long Island Village is America's most affluent community. Kensington doesn't have the highest per capita income. That would be Chevy Chase Village, Maryland, or the largest houses, Piney Point Village, Texas, or the strongest mix of white-collar employees, Ladera, California, but it does offer the best blend of those and other attributes. Here are the 25 leaders on our affluence scale. Number 1, Kensington, New York. Number 2, Hunters Creek Village, Texas. Chevy Chase, Maryland. Dover, Massachusetts. Great Falls, Virginia. Kenilworth, Illinois. Belle Meade, Tennessee. Rolling Hills, California. Somerset, Maryland. Scarsdale, New York. And on this list, Raleigh came in at 3,359, and Durham comes in at 3,779. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. The first headline, Global Connections Foster Good Relations. When the U.S. Department of State comes calling through its International Visitor Leadership Program, Biz listens carefully. As part of the government's regional project for the Middle East and North Africa, Biz hosted a few journalists and government officials November 13 to provide an overview of the economic, political, and social foundations relevant to U.S. trade and investment practices. Representatives and interpreters from Tunisia, Algeria, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the Palestinian territories talked about the news gathering and reporting process in their respective countries, but were particularly interested in the research-driven projects in the Triangle, financed by the National Institutes of Health and other governmental agencies. Biz has been hosting international journalists and government officials through the program for a while now. After every one of these meetings is thankful for the freedom of press and the rights to expression available in the U.S. When our visitors hear about our media and its relationship with the public and government officials, they often notice the wheels of democracy in action. And for Biz, that certainly makes for a pleasant conversation. When the White House calls. If Apex resident William Harrison did not return your phone calls in the past couple of days, he was busy. Harrison, a lawyer at K&L Gates, was invited to the White House on November 18 to be briefed on the Obama administration's next steps to get the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement moving in Congress. Harrison was part of a select group of business leaders across the country assembled by the nonprofit group Business Forward, which often matches business executives with White House economic advisors before an official communique is finalized. "I have been involved in international trade for decades," Harrison says, who also is an associate professor at NC State University College of Textiles. "The business group reached out to me, and I said yes." Harrison, who is in favor of the TPP, is the former chairman of the board of the World Trade Center, North Carolina. Imagine your very own wine locker. Raleigh's latest small plates restaurant and wine bar, Moore Kitchen and Bar, opened officially to the public November 13 at the site of the old Mantra Indian restaurant at 116 Northwest Street. The wine bar features a wide selection of more than 160 bottles and varietals from various regions. Moore, the new concept from Raleigh restaurant group JMR Kitchens, owner of Taste and the Oak restaurants, should gain some traction with its unique wine lockers. Wine director Corey Sloan, who has spent 15 years in the industry, working for Bella Monica, 18 Seaboard, The Country Vintner, and Tryon Distribution, will lead a wine club for the restaurant. Lockers are rented for either 6 or 12 months and cost $115 and $95 per month, respectively. Lockers include monthly hand-selected wines kept fresh using the Coravin wine system, wine on birthdays, and bubbly on New Year's Eve, 12-month rentals only, early access to VIP events, and monthly newsletters. Meet the man who's biked to work for decades. Town of Chapel Hill Senior Ombuds Jim Hugerick was awarded the 2015 Golden Spoke Award by GoSmart NC. The Golden Spoke Award is presented annually to a person who commits to using a bicycle to get to work. Hugerick says he hasn't taken a car to the office in his 40 years with the town, regardless of the weather. Hugerick is the second in his family to win a Golden Mode Award. His son, Reed Hugerick, won a Golden Sneaker Award in 2010 for his dedication to walking to work at the town of Apex. Will Beer Garden's tap count go in the record books? On November 21, Raleigh Beer Garden will aim for a spot in Guinness World Records as the title holder for the most varieties of beer brands on draft, tap, and for the largest number of breweries on draft. "It is exciting to be able to go after two world records," said Raleigh Beer Garden owner Niall Hanley. "More importantly, we are delighted about all of the attention this will bring to the craft beer scene in North Carolina, and particularly here in Raleigh." Operated by Hibernian Management Incorporated, the Raleigh Beer Garden at 614 Glenwood Avenue in Glenwood South has 378 beers on tap. And finally, in a section called The Hype, Triangle Cities make headlines in recent national rankings. Number 4, Cary is the fourth safest city in the U.S., according to Smart Asset. Number 6, Durham is the sixth richest city in the U.S., according to Bloomberg. Number 6, Cary is sixth best place to live in the U.S., according to 24/7 Wall Street. And number 14, UNC Chapel Hill is number 14 among top graduate schools for entrepreneurship, according to the Princeton Review. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline, new price for downtown Raleigh land, $6 million per acre. Recent deals show premium on downtown sites. Two recently announced bids for commercial property in the downtown Raleigh district are raising the valuation perception of land downtown to levels never previously seen before in the Triangle. First, following a four-month upset bid process that went into nine rounds of bidding, the Lundy Group of Raleigh has come out on top with its offer to pay $6.31 million for a 1.18-acre site at 301 Hillsborough Street, The property, currently being used as a parking lot for Campbell University's law school, was being offered for sale by the city and is zoned to accommodate a building of commercial, retail, and residential development of up to 20 stories high. Second, in a separate deal, a partnership of five veterans of the Raleigh real estate market have put together an offer of $20.2 million to buy the headquarters campus of the News and Observer newspaper operations. The site encompasses about 3 acres of land on much of the city block bound by Salisbury, Martin, McDowell, and Hargett Streets, pricing the deal at about $6.7 million per acre. Russ Jones, president of Raleigh-based Davidson & Jones Companies and one of the five partners with the buyer group, calling itself Above the Fold LLC, says they had been negotiating purchase terms with the newspaper's leadership for nearly a year. The deal includes the renovation of the paper's press building at the corner of Martin and Salisbury Streets, with 50,000 square feet of office space that will be leased back to the NNO, plus another 15,000 square feet of street-level retail space that will be built out of the former distribution docking area along Martin Street. Jones confirms that the redeveloped portion of the property will likely include a high-end hotel element, like the Aloft Durham Downtown Hotel that Jones's company recently built in Durham, and the Aloft Raleigh Hotel that three of the other Above the Fold LLC partners recently opened. However, how much more commercial or residential development the project will include is still to be determined. "We're going into the process with our eyes wide open, even with the hotel," he says. "Our agenda is to make that site work." New retail purpose for old Kmart site in Raleigh. The Wilmington owner of the former Kmart store site, demolished nearly a year ago on Capitol Boulevard in North Raleigh, has signed long-term lease deals to bring two new anchor tenants to the retail site, including the area's first Hobby Lobby. Property owner Stuart Sneeden of Z.A. Sneeden Sons in Wilmington, which also owns the shopping center next door with H.H. Gregg, Haverty's Furniture, and Jared Galleria of Jewelry, has so far been mum about any potential new retailers that might be moving to the site, but documents filed in Wake County show that leases have been signed with both national arts and crafts retailer Hobby Lobby and electronics giant Best Buy. Hobby Lobby will be moving into a space that's 50,106 square feet, or about half the space the old Kmart used to occupy. It will be the Raleigh area's first Hobby Lobby store. Best Buy will be relocating from a smaller store space at a nearby Town Square shopping center, taking 45,130 square feet in the new building. The Hobby Lobby lease extends for 15 years, and the Best Buy lease extends through the next 10 years. Raleigh's newest co-working office opens downtown. Industrious, a national group that builds co-working spaces for member companies and employees across the country, officially opened its new Raleigh office on the third floor of the Charter Square building in Raleigh on November 4, and already about half of the personal office spaces are spoken for. Jamie Hodari, co-founder and co-CEO of Industrious, confirms that 14 tenant companies that have already taken occupancy, with about 75 employees already using the space. The max build-out capacity is about 200 people. "Raleigh is moving much quicker than pretty much any city we've gone into, other than the original location in Chicago," Hodari says. Industrious, he estimates, spent about $2.5 million on construction upfit and improvements at Charter Square, which is a bit higher than what the company typically invests when expanding into new markets. "Usually we go into older buildings, and if, say, you're in an old warehouse-type building, you want to use rawer materials. In this case, because the space is so beautiful with higher-end finishes, we needed to have a higher-end product than we would typically use in other cities," he says. Industrious also has co-working spaces in Atlanta, Nashville, St. Louis, Brooklyn, Chicago, Columbus, Minneapolis, and Philadelphia. And finally, a section in memoriam. Many in the Triangle's commercial real estate market are mourning the death of Robert Bob Huckel, who died November 12 after a long fight with cancer. Huckel, 58, had advanced to become senior vice president at Grand Bridge Real Estate Capital after spending several years as a commercial lender at Wachovia Bank following his retirement from a professional football career, playing for the Dallas Cowboys and later the San Francisco 49ers. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Healthcare page written by Jason DeBruin. The first headline, Patheon named in drug packaging lawsuit. Durham-based Patheon is named in a lawsuit brought by more than 100 women seeking back child support after 113 of them became pregnant while allegedly taking mispackaged birth control medication. The lawsuit, filed in Philadelphia, is brought against Qualitest Incorporated, a subsidiary of the Irish drug maker Endo Pharmaceuticals Incorporated, but names Patheon as well as Vintage Pharmaceuticals as defendants. In September 2011, the defendants issued a nationwide recall of 8 different oral contraceptive products packaged by Patheon for Qualitest. The recall was initiated when a pharmacist in Iowa returned 3 blister packs of Cyclofem because one of the packs had been packaged upside down, obscuring the lot number and expiration date, according to court records. In the recall notice, the company reported that the, quote, select blister packages were rotated 180 degrees within the card, reversing the weekly tablet orientation and making the lot number and expiry date no longer visible, unquote. Of the 507,966 blister packs that were returned in the recall, 53 were improperly packaged in the reverse order, according to court records. Patheon provides pharmaceutical services to drug companies. It is a business unit of DPX Holdings, which itself is the result of a $2.65 billion transaction between JLL Partners, a middle market private equity firm, and Royal DSM, a Netherlands-based life sciences conglomerate. In June, Patheon filed to go public, though has not completed a public offering. Representing the defendants are Stephen Beard and Keith Bodo, Georgia lawyers who sought a motion to certify a class that included the same plaintiffs in district court in Atlanta. In an order, District Judge Steve C. Jones denied class certification, partly because he ruled that there was no single defect affecting every pack, but instead there is a possibility that only a small number of blister packs manufactured incorrectly were received and improperly used by consumers. It appears that individualized facts, particularly relating to whether each plaintiff received an improperly packaged Qualitest birth control product, and whether she became pregnant as a result of taking the pills in the wrong order, will predominate over the common factual issues alleged by plaintiffs, according to the order. UNC teams up with NCCU on research. Researchers at UNC School of Medicine and NC Central University will share a $7.5 million grant to continue a project aimed at understanding and reducing alcohol-related pathologies among African Americans. The award, which comes from the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism of the National Institutes of Health, will continue a research program investigating the molecular mechanisms of fetal alcohol pathology, alcoholic liver disease, alcohol-related cancers, including breast cancer, and the effects of alcohol and marijuana on brainstem cells and neurotoxicity. The partnership opens UNC research laboratories, core facilities, and libraries to NCCU faculty. Johnston County approved for new facility. Johnston Manor, in the outskirts of Garner, has received approval to build a 132-bed, $10 million adult care home. The project will replace Cardinal Care Assisted Living Village in Benson, which is not operational, and Smithfield House West in Smithfield. Executives from Johnston Manor plan to help the 44 residents at Smithfield House West to transition into new placements. Because of its central location, Johnston Manor expects all residents to originate from Johnston County. The facility expects to achieve licensure in October 2017. For the first year of operation, projection shows a 36% occupancy rate, which bumps up to 90% by the end of year two. Financial projections show the facility to be profitable by year two and hit revenue of $4.3 million and net income of $736,000 by year three. By the second year, the facility expects to employ an estimated 58 workers. For a private room, Johnston Manor projects a $125.60 per diem reimbursement from private payers. The facility will have 56 private rooms and 76 semi-private rooms. Public payers like Medicaid will reimburse Johnston Manor $76 for semi-private rooms. Projections show Johnston County to have a higher population of residents aged 65 years and older than the state as a whole. And data from the American Community Survey illustrates that Johnston County's 65 and older population increased 22% from 2009 to 2013. Because North Carolina enforces certificate of need laws in healthcare, the project required regulatory approval, which the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services granted with minor condition. And along with this article, there is a listing of Johnston Manor big numbers: 44,930 patient days, $4.3 million revenue, and $736,000 net income. And finally, in a section called CEOs to Know, Becker's Hospital Review named two Triangle Hospital executives among a group of 130 nonprofit hospital CEOs to know for 2015. The men and women on this list lead some of the largest, most successful, and prominent nonprofit healthcare organizations in the country, according to Becker's. The first is Kevin Sowers, president of Duke University Hospital. Sauer started at Duke University Hospital as an oncology nurse in 1986 and served in various administrative roles, including associate vice president for hospitals and clinical facilities, before being named COO in 2003 and president in 2009. And Dr. William Roper, CEO of UNC Healthcare System. In addition to serving as CEO of the UNC Healthcare System, Dr. Roper is the Dean of the School of Medicine, Vice Chancellor for Medical Affairs at UNC Chapel Hill, and a Professor of Health Policy and Management, Pediatrics, and Social Medicine. And now we turn to the On Technology page, written by Lauren Onisorge. The first headline: Frontier to bring 200 jobs to Durham. Hiring starts now for the 200 jobs Frontier Communications plans to bring to Durham. That's according to Dennis Bloss, Frontier's vice president and general manager in North Carolina, who says the first 100 to 125 hires could be in place in the first quarter of next year. For Bloss, it's a big win, as he's been campaigning for the expansion in Durham since a pending acquisition was announced for Verizon assets that will double the size of the company, heightening the need for the support personnel the new center will supply. He says it was hard-fought, as other states, including Florida, Texas, Utah, and South Carolina, pitched their own aggressive incentive packages at the company. Until Governor Pat McCrory signed incentives into North Carolina's budget, it was all but assured that North Carolina would lose out to one of the other offers, he says. It's been a very tough negotiation, Bloss says. The state approved $880,500 in Jobs Development Investment Grant money for the jobs, which pay up to $70,000, an average wage of $47,112, and range from billing and support specialists to field installation technicians. It's just the latest chapter in Frontier's Durham story, which began in 2010 when it purchased local assets from Verizon. Last year, Frontier picked Durham to debut its fiber internet service, beating Google Fiber and AT&T to the Bull City, and the build-out continues. Precision Hawk to test plane shadowers. Somewhere in the triangle sky, a drone may be flying suspiciously close to a paraglider. Raleigh drone developer Precision Hawk tasked earlier this year by the feds with researching ways to allow drones to safely fly beyond their pilots' line of sight, confirms it's now in the initial phases of testing for what's called LATAS, L-A-T-A-S, low-altitude tracking and avoidance systems, and it involves a few brave pilots. "We have a very well-defined scientific research plan," assures Precision Hawk Business Development Director Tyler Collins. "There's never any harm to the UAV or the paraglider." Flights taking off now in the Triangle could someday lead to the much-talked-about drone delivery flights by Amazon and Walmart. But initially, the research flights are just to establish variables, specifically the paraglider, and in later phases, crop dusters and other small manned aircraft, is flying so that researchers can determine how aware a drone pilot is of what else is in the sky without any technological aids. And workload is being taken into account. After all, companies such as Amazon don't want their pilots spending all their time monitoring the skies. Any solution guiding drones away from other aircraft needs to happen hassle-free. "This week, we're just testing that baseline, although we plan to progress through that testing very, very quickly," he said November 17. Collins says the plane is to be conducting test flights beyond a pilot's line of sight by the end of the year. When their findings are complete, they'll be delivered to the FAA for consideration as the agency makes its own regulatory decisions regarding the technology. Tech startup inks lease in warehouse district. 2-year-old tech startup Pendo has secured a new headquarters to support its bullish growth projections. Serial entrepreneur and CEO Todd Olson confirms the company has signed a lease with Empire Properties to take about 12,000 square feet of space at a historic downtown Raleigh building that used to house the electric motor and repair company. "We wanted to stay, generally speaking, in the same area that we've grown fond of, the warehouse district," Olson says. "The space will have a rooftop deck and will overlook the Shimmer Wall, but it's the space, not the view, that Pendo needs desperately. The company, which has a little more than 20 employees, plans to hire at least 40 positions in 2016. It's outgrown its current space in HQ Raleigh to the point where a move has become a necessity." The news comes weeks after the company disclosed an $11 million fundraising round led by Battery Ventures. Vossberg moves from robots to radio frequency filters. From sea robots to radio frequency jammers, Rick Vossberg, the former CEO of Durham robotics company Necton, has been busy. Vossberg is now trying to raise $1.1 million for his company, Physical Devices, according to documents filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And it's for a project he's been working on for some time with former colleagues from Nexton. This time, it's not just robots he's researching, it's radio frequency signals. According to the firm's website, Physical Devices is developing radio frequency filters for ultra-wideband tuning of smartphones and other devices. Simply put, it's separating the RF signals you want from the ones you don't. The goal is to create a jamming, resistant precision GPS unit that could be used in everything from drones to smartphones. And it's just the latest invention to come out of the lab led by Vossberg, who was CEO of Necton when it was sold to Roomba maker iRobot in 2008 for an initial cash payment of $10 million. He was then appointed executive director of Maritime Systems for the Boston robot giant. At the time, Necton, a Duke University spinoff, had already developed what it called the Ranger, a meter-long underwater robot designed to assist federal clients such as the Navy with intelligence operations, mine warfare, and harbor defense. Once owned by iRobot, Necton's Durham plant went on to produce the Sea Glider robot out of research licensed from the University of Washington, a deep-diving unmanned vehicle designed for lengthy missions covering thousands of miles. But the entire plant was shut down by iRobot in 2012, resulting in 30 local job cuts, citing broad and significant defense cuts as the motivator for the restructuring. Documents filed with the SEC imply, however, that Vossberg, like his former Necton College colleague, Chuck Pell, who went on to develop robotic surgical tools at Durham startup Fishient, did anything but sit still. Four investors have already signed on to his startup idea, and they've already contributed $500,000. According to the filing, he has just under $600,000 left in the round. According to state records, he first incorporated Physical Devices as a limited liability company in 2009, listing a home on Surrey Lane in Durham as his business address. Just last year, he filed new incorporation papers for Physical Devices as a business corporation, listing former Necton CFO Jeffrey Bourne as his secretary and treasurer, and Christopher Lynch, an attorney at Wyrick Robbins, as his assistant secretary. Charles and Colvard names new CEO. Channel Advisor Chief Marketing Officer Suzanne Miglucci will take the CEO seat at Morrisville-based man-made diamond maker Charles and Colvard in January, replacing retiring CEO Marvin Beasley. Miglucci, whose marketing experience runs the gamut from SideQuest to IBM-owned Arsenal Digital Solutions, will be tasked with pushing CNC to gain market share in an increasingly complex marketing space, says Neil Goldman, executive chairman. He says it's no surprise that the company is turning to the high-tech marketing bench and hiring its next leader. We believe Suzanne, as our new president and chief executive officer, will advance the company to its next level of success, he says. And in a section called He Said It, the first quote, "It's a matter of execution now." And that's from Bob Winston, CEO of Winston Hospitality and chair of a Research Triangle Foundation development committee tasked with revamping Park Center. And another quote, "You're drilling into a rock and all of a sudden you feel a lot of force. That's an indication that you've hit another material." That's from Robert Little, CEO of ATI Industrial Automation, describing the force-detecting sensors his company is developing in Apex for the Mars rover. And our next news story in the Triangle Business Journal is headlined, WakeMed posts $50 million loss, cites higher expenses. Expenses tied capital in three sizable projects, including raises, led to a year in which WakeMed Health and Hospitals posted a nearly $50 million operating loss. Top line, the Raleigh-based health system, recorded $1.05 billion in revenues, but investments in the new WakeMed North Hospital, electronic health records implementation, and a population health initiative led to higher expenses for an operational loss of $49.9 million. When looking at fiscal year 2015, "It really looked to be a year of investment," says WakeMed Chief Financial Officer Michael Browning. "The best way to say it is that most organizations take one of these projects on in a year. We took on three." The hospital invested $95 million during the year in capital projects, which aren't recorded on the revenue and expense report, but another $52 million of operational expenses tied to those capital investments, says Browning. In addition, WakeMed invested another $46 million into its workforce through new hires and raises. "Numbers can be deceiving at times," says Browning. "I think 2016 should be a very good year for WakeMed." As of September 30, the last day of WakeMed's fiscal year, the hospital system had $555 million in cash reserves, or what amounts to enough cash to operate for 198 days. In healthcare, an important measure is days of cash on hand, or the amount of cash a hospital has to operate if it never took in another dollar of revenue. Ratings agencies look closely at this measure, and a figure at 200 days is generally considered good. Other Triangle hospital systems, including UNC Healthcare and Duke Health, reported higher operating income than in recent years. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page, and we will read the column called Motivational Talk, 21 Thoughts for a Richer, More Purposeful Life. And this is written by Harvey McKay, who is the author of the New York Times number one bestsellers, Swim with the Sharks Without Being Eaten Alive, and Beware the Naked Man Who Offers You His Shirt. He has been chairman of McKay Mitchell Envelope Corporation since 1959. I've had this little gem tucked away for many years, and I refer to it from time to time to remind myself of what's really important. I've searched for the source, which I haven't been able to find, because I'd like to thank the author for these wonderful lessons. Here are the original thoughts, followed by my impressions. The most destructive habit, worry. The greatest joy, giving. The greatest loss, loss of self-respect. The most satisfying work, helping others. The ugliest personality trait, selfishness. The most endangered species, dedicated leaders. Our greatest natural resource, our youth. The greatest shot in the arm, encouragement. The greatest problem to overcome, fear. The most effective sleeping pill, peace of mind. The most crippling disease, excuses. The most powerful force in life, love. The most incredible computer, the brain. The worst thing to be without, hope. The deadliest weapon, the tongue. The two most power-filled words, I can. The greatest asset, faith. The most worthless emotion, self-pity. The most beautiful attire, a smile. The most prized possession, integrity. And the most contagious spirit, enthusiasm. Digging deeper, worry. Did you know this word is derived from an Anglo-Saxon word that means to strangle or to choke? People do literally worry themselves to death, or heart disease, high blood pressure, ulcers, nervous disorders, and all sorts of other nasty conditions. Worry can destroy your peace of mind. The best remedy? Remember that tomorrow is a new day full of promise. Giving, helping others. These two go hand in hand. You're always in a position to give, just as you can always help someone. Never pass up an opportunity to share what you have. Dedicated leaders understand that they have tremendous power to help those they lead by setting a solid example and demonstrating the highest standards. Selfishness. President Harry S. Truman summed it up so well. It is amazing what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit. An offshoot of selfishness is self-pity, which no one should waste time on anyway. Perhaps the worst effect is loss of self-respect. Self-respect is what motivates you to be the best you can be, and in turn you can motivate others to be their best. Encouragement is oxygen to the soul. People appreciate recognition, encouragement, and praise. Offering encouragement based on a person's character or actions inspires them to perform in such a manner that invites additional praise. Be careful not to let the tongue undo the positive effects of encouragement. Use it for good. Hope is what gets many of us through our worst days. Hope is believing that every cloud has a silver lining, and when that cloud rains, it makes things grow. A perfect partner is faith, for without faith, hope is meaningless. Love completes this trio. Real power comes through when you love someone or something, whether it's a career or a cause. Integrity. Either you have it or you don't. If you have integrity, nothing else matters. If you don't have integrity, nothing else matters. Doing the right thing is never the wrong thing to do. Enthusiasm is the spark that ignites our lives. It's one of the most important attributes to success. It also leads to an attitude of, I can, which provides the confidence required for achievement. And also on the Viewpoint page, we now turn to the Editor's Notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is editor of Triangle Business Journal. The headline on his Viewpoint column, Keynes Community Must Come Together This Time. The Triangle's only major league professional sports team is struggling for wins. The 2006 Stanley Cup champions, still the only major league sports crown for North Carolina, have managed to win only 6 of their 18 games. As of November 18, the team is 7 points away from a wild card playoff spot, and it ranks 29th among 30 teams in goal difference, goals scored against goals allowed, with a negative 18 mark. All these stats may paint an ominous sign of a team in distress, but I think the worst stat for the team right now is this. The Hurricanes rank 30th, dead last in the league, in terms of average attendance per game. Through the first 9 home games, a little more than 100,000 people attended games at PNC Arena, averaging about 11,227 per game. That cavernous 19,772 capacity arena looks woefully empty every game night. But we are still in the first quarter of the season. There is time, but the next 15 games may determine the Hurricanes' future this season. 6 of the next 9 games are at home. They have 7 home games in December. To save the season, this is the time for this community and the hockey club to take matters into their own hands. First, memo to the Canes management. For the 3 games in early December, 3rd, 5th, and 6th, and the 4 games in late December, sell all the lower bowl tickets for $25 and the upper bowl tickets for $10. Season ticket holders may complain. Tell them you will prorate their bill in the 2016 to 2017 season. The purpose is simple. PNC Arena needs to buzz. The Hurricanes are loaded with young players and they could use additional motivation. You can talk all you want about a professional's mindset of leaving everything on the ice every game, but the current plan is not working. Not to mention a full and raucous PNC Arena is a sight to behold. Many former players such as Rod Brindamore, Glenn Wesley, and current general manager Ron Francis have said in the past that fans played a big role in assisting the team during the 2006 Cup run. Now, a memo to the business executives. Support your team. Buy tickets for your employees. Give them as gifts during the holiday season. Rest assured, the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area is better off having a strong pro sports franchise than not having one at all. We need the Canes and the community to step up now. Crowding the arena is far from solving the long-term challenges, but neither is not doing anything. Francis and team coach Bill Peters can work on the X's and O's and commit to moving the team forward. Time for the business community to provide that extra juice. The Save the Season campaign starts now. Who's with me? And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the executive voice Q&A column. This one is featuring Robert Ryan, and he is the CEO of Durham-based Sioderm, which recently struck a deal to be acquired by Amicus Therapeutics. The headline, how one drug led to almost a cool billion. CEO targeted a disease and propelled Sioderm to a $947 million deal. And this article is written by Jason DeBruin. Small Durham-based drug developer Sioderm Incorporated made a big splash November 2 when it sold to Amicus Therapeutics in a deal that could be worth $947 million. Amicus paid Sioderm shareholders $125 million in cash and $104 million through 7 million newly issued Amicus shares. Sioderm shareholders will receive the remainder depending on development and sales milestones. Sioderm CEO Robert Ryan talks about the deal, his journey in pharma, and what's next. What brought you to the pharmaceutical industry? I grew up in a family where my dad was in the pharmaceutical industry for many years, so I was able to be involved with some understanding at that time of the development of drugs. This, along with my focus more on the life sciences in college, including opportunities to work in the medical field, brought me to an area that I enjoy, which is development of therapies to treat various diseases. How did you end up at Sioderm? I founded Sioderm with the intent to develop SD-101, Zorblisa, for the treatment of the skin effects associated with epidermolysis bullosa. I have been involved in research and the development of pharmaceuticals for over 25 years, and when I had the opportunity to develop this product for EB, I created the company and progressed the program forward. The skin disease you are looking to fight, EB, is tragic in its effects on children. Is it tough on you to interact with these victims and their families? EB is one of the most difficult diseases that I have ever seen families face. I know how difficult it is for the patients and the emotional and financial effects it can have also on the families. Having an opportunity to develop a product that may have a tremendous benefit to them makes everything easier. Although tragic, EB is a very small market. What's the business argument for targeting this area for development? The development of this product for EB was never focused on a business reason from my end, although the market and patient population is much larger than most people realize. For investors, the market and business argument for investing was sufficient to enable us to be well-funded to move this program through development quickly and with a highly skilled development team. What is the estimated market for your therapy? There are an estimated 20,000 to 30,000 people with EB in the United States and 30,000 to 40,000 in Europe. Globally, estimates have ranged from 300,000 to 500,000 people with various types of EB. You were successful in raising private capital and then merged with Amicus Therapeutics. What's next? Amicus Therapeutics will work with us to commercialize our product once the clinical development is complete, and assuming a successful outcome, approved by the regulatory authorities, we will be marketing the product, once approved, with Amicus Therapeutics. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration awarded Cyoderm a rolling new drug application. What does this mean for the company? A rolling NDA allows completed portions of the development program, like manufacturing or non-clinical, that are typically submitted when a complete NDA is filed in the U.S., to be submitted earlier and potentially evaluated earlier in the regulatory review process by various functional areas within the review division of the FDA. What's your management style? My management style is completely open door and always accessible, and I believe in a similar work environment where people work internally in a collaborative effort with no limitations based on reporting lines. It is important that all have the ability to provide their views, but we work as a team. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.